This is Just Life on Radio Maria. On today's program, we're going to have a lovely look into building leaders and speakers to share their faith, their faith and their interest in science, perhaps even their careers in science, and how the two do not battle, but coincide and work beautifully together. Today we have Marta, who is the co-director of Faith Journeys in Science, which was one of the most successful podcasts and programs on Radio Maria to date. And we also have with us David, who is the director of ECLAS. Before we get fully into it, David, ECLAS, it's a lovely term. And I love how it, what it, can you please share with our listeners what ECLAS means?
Yeah, it stands for Equipping Christian Leadership in an Age of Science. And it came out of a conversation that a couple of us had over 10 years ago, which was that when particularly senior Christian leaders were asked questions or confronted science, their eyes filled with fear, or they were negative about science, or they were silent about science. And so we wanted to do something that would transform that fear into a sense that science was joyful and a gift from God that could help them in their ministry, in their mission, and indeed in their understanding of God.
I love that, David. It's also, it's a topic that is quite in the media. It probably has been for a long time. When did ECLAS start and really get pushing? Like, when did the little disciples think, oh, this is happening, let's do this?
Well, as you say, this is a question about science and faith that's often in the media. And just in the last couple of days or so, very famous physicist Peter Higgs, who discovered the Higgs boson, which was sometimes called the God particle. There were lots of obituaries about him. And again, people pick up questions about God and faith and all of that. But our ECLAS work started a decade ago at Durham University. And a number of us were scientists by training, but also committed Christians. We were concerned that if our church leaders, and by which I mean primarily senior church leaders, bishops and leaders of big church organizations, that if they saw science as a source of fear, what did that mean for those of us who spend our lives as scientists? Who actually find a Christian vocation to be a scientist. And if your leader doesn't affirm science or vocation to be a Christian and a scientist, then actually they don't use some of the amazing resources that God has given to his church, which are the scientists and science teachers and engineers and technologists who go about their day-to-day work as Christian folk. And the opportunity of affirming that as a vocation and discipleship is really, really important.
Amen. You've got a beautiful quote on your website from Tom McLeish. Mm-hmm. And he said, when we do science, we participate in the healing work of the Creator, just as you explained, that it is doing and continuing the work. And that can really be a tool, I would say a weapon, but let's be joyful about it, a tool, a beautiful array of dinner dishes, I don't know, but a way to help the faith and let it connect. Oh, I love that.
I think you're absolutely right on that. And Tom, who was one of our co-founders of our project, stressed always that it's very easy to get drawn into images of conflict and warfare between science and faith, where actually we do start to use these things as a weapon to attack often a mythical view of science or faith. But actually, that image of a tool or even a gift to be received is much better, because it makes us stay away from the kind of aggressive conflict model of science and faith, which has been so embedded in Western culture for over 100 years or so. Never was before that, by the way. It's only the last 100 years or so that we've had that conflict model. But often Christians kind of fall into that, and they think we have to shout louder than the scientists, or particularly the scientists who happen to be atheists. We have to take them on in discussions or debates where we are the winner. Actually, I don't think Christians have to do that. I think we have to simply rejoice in what God has given us, enjoy the creation and exploration of the creation. And in that way, we subvert that conflict model that has been so entrenched in Western culture.
Oh, I'm looking forward to hearing more about how Eklas does that. But let's head over to Marta again. She's the co-director of the Faith Journeys in Science. She has been a volunteer at Radio Maria for, I'm going to say 4 years. She's doing the math, but I think it's 4 years, in which she and a few other folks, Father Robert Verrill, Kathleen Too, Charles Wilson, all these folks may have been coming up with a similar thought that the folks in Durham did, but I think they came at it at a different way. Marta, could you explain where the groundlings, what was the big bang that started the Science and Faith series on Radio Maria?
So I think it was quite providential. We always talk about it and rejoice and talk about it in a really providential way, because I think it was during the second lockdown of COVID. It was definitely after March 8th. So it was around October of that year. And I was kind of looking for things to do. I was teaching online, which, you know, took up most of my morning, but I didn't sort of have anything to do in the afternoons or the evenings. And a friend of mine suggested, look, you've wanted to start a podcast, go a bit humbler and try to kind of reach out to excuse me, an organization that already started doing shows and stuff. And so I kind of sent an email to Radio Maria going, look, these are my credentials. I'm a teacher, I teach biology, and I've also done some science and faith workshops for God and the Big Bang, which I can talk about later if you want, when I was a student at university. And, you know, these are my credentials. I didn't really expect to hear anything back, to be honest. And the next morning, Charles Wilson, president of Radio Maria, scheduled a Zoom call with me and Kathleen. And they were like, yeah, I don't know if you know, but Kathleen had contacted, obviously I didn't know, Kathleen had contacted Charles to say, look, I want to start this up. And we just need someone to be the voice. That's the expression that she used. There's many, many voices at Radio Maria in the show, but she just wanted someone to get it all going. And they were like, yeah, we just literally prayed a couple of days ago. And the day after that, we just got your email. And we just think you'd be a perfect fit. So that's how it started. I think for Kathleen, it was a matter of, she was working at a journal, chemistry journal, I want to say. I might get this wrong, so she can maybe correct us in the Facebook post. But she wanted to start it up because there's a lot of questions that were asking her in terms of her colleagues related to science and faith. And she found herself unable to answer. And she felt that she lacked confidence. And so she wanted to start something up that would help other Catholics, obviously, but Christians in her situation to fend for themselves in a very charitable but clear and concise way. And I think this was her way to get it all going. And obviously Radio Maria had a similar wish as well, to have a plethora of different shows. So.
And so it was definitely from a place, it wasn't so much of looking at the leadership, it was I myself need to, Kathleen wasn't the head of a church or anything. She wanted to be emboldened and entrusted herself in the answers. And Charles as well had shared several times about how in his role at the hospital, it was very much to be kept separate, this faith, the science and everything. And he wanted to be able to have the right answers. And he had the questions as well. So a bit of a different way, a different start than the Eklas team wanting to give this to the Radio Maria team, needing, searching and needing to find answers as well. So it ends up being so lovely that the two, Eklas and and Radio Maria and Science and Faith, got to get together. Let's go with Marta. How did this, I mean, were you just Googling like la 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 Christian, science, faith? How did this Eklas come into your life?
I think it was word of mouth. I knew a few people that I've worked in the past with in terms of science and faith, and they were like, oh, you know, this is coming up. There's some funding. You have to apply for it. I know the organization. And I think you guys would be a perfect fit for it. So you don't want, why don't you just apply and give that a shot? I want to say that was 2019. And then our first show was in 2020. So once we'd recorded it and stuff. But yeah, we just got a few people together. It was Father Robert Vero, Charles, Kathleen, a few of the editors of Radio Maria. And we kind of started working together for the proposal. And Eklas were very, very supportive throughout the whole thing. We had any questions, we could email them. And, you know, what should we write here? What should we write there? I'd never written a grant proposal in my life before. So I was like, I'm not entirely sure how to do it. So we just sought support throughout. And they were very, very, very gracious and very generous throughout the application process. And we heard back, I think it was about a couple of months or a month and a half after that we'd got it. I think we were personally struck by... And I was. This was a personal thing. I took it a bit personally because I was like, "Oh my goodness! I don't think many Catholic organisations have got a grant from Eklas before." Sure. So I really, really wanted this because I thought, you know, we could be the groundbreaking in this, kind of be the trendsetters in a way. And yeah, it was just a really, really, really educational experience for me as well.
David, could you share, so yes. What sorts of projects, we haven't gotten to really talk about, but what sort of projects do Eklas support?
So one of the strands that we do is what we call scientists in congregations. And we thought to ourselves that what we wanted to do was to support, encourage projects that were done by real scientists with church leaders. And that would use the gifts within congregations. And these would be exemplar projects, groundbreaking projects, where church leaders would see just some of the energy in this area. And Martyrs Project and Radio Maria were one of our, we're very, very proud to be associated with it and to see the development of it. And so it consists of a number of things. The first is that, money is important. You need funding in order to do some of these initiative and sometimes risky initiatives to do it. And so we were able, from funding from the John Templeton Foundation in the US, to be able to, and we continue to, offer a number of awards, financial awards for projects that use the gifts of scientists alongside theologians, church leaders, radio stations, podcasting, whatever it might be. And to be honest, we thought when we first started the project, we'd get churches simply putting on a series of lectures by very boring old white men like me, giving a series of lectures. What we actually got were ideas like Radio Maria and Marta. We got Messy Church wanting to do work with families and small children in a book called Messy Science, 101 Experiments to Blow Up Your Church. Messy Church Goes Wild, taking children and families out into the countryside to marvel at God's creation. There was a project in St. Albans called Take Your Vicar Into the Lab. I mean, not to dissect them or to pull them apart, but to show church leaders just where scientists worked and the kind of work that they were doing. And then a number of media projects, plays, which toured the country. And then the Radio Maria project, which we thought was very innovative. And as Marta said, it's an area where we'd not had any applications from the Roman Catholic constituency of the Christian Church. And so we particularly thought it was strategic, but also really imaginative to do it. And so that program, Scientists in Congregations, is open for proposals. We've got a round at the moment, and the date for applications closes for this round at the end of April. So it may be a little too early for any listeners to think about. But we'll have another round of applications in years to come. And so, as Marta said, you can look at the website. You can then talk to our staff who are there to help support project proposals. I mean, it is a competition, I'm afraid, in the sense that we get far more applications than we've got money to fund. But we have a team of advisors who look at the applications and say, what's imaginative? What's risky? What's strategic? And then we're able to support a number of projects.
Oh, I love this. All right. Listeners, you've been teased about what was this project that Radio Maria did. Well, we're going to share with that after the break. Also, after the break, we're going to hear from David and Marta. What are some of the questions? What are some of the topics that continually come up and need support from scientists to our leaders on answering to our regular parishioners and folks? So stay tuned.
Lord of all creation, of water, earth, and sky, the heavens are your tabernacle. Glory to the Lord on high.
God of Wonders by City on a Hill. This was one of the songs that was part of the podcast series and broadcast series of Science and Faith on Radio Maria England. Those are available. Just check out your Spotify, Apple, Google Play, all your podcast providers, and you'll see Radio Maria England's Science and Faith. You'll hear Marta as well as an army of scientists sharing their answers on different topics. Season one being special questions that we were all thinking of, and scientists giving their information about it. But then we go into a new phase. Well, season one and two are different questions, but then we go into a new phase where Eccles has stepped in and started supporting this project. So, Marta, can you tell us what is this, as David explained, this gift of a project for that Radio Maria started?
So after being for a few months in the studio, and it was again during COVID, the first season of it. And so for most of it, I was at home. I couldn't even go to the Cambridge studio or anything. So it was online, and we thought, I think what we've got here and a few people to listen to it, this is great. And take it out to the streets, take it on tour. And the funding that we obtained, we used it for that. So after the studio phase, we've got the phase one, phase two, and the legacy phase that we like to call it. So the phase one, we took the show to parishes. So it was across London and Cambridge and Hertfordshire as well, and St Albans. And we toured, I think it was about 8 Catholic churches to take this conversation to the congregation. So we had a panel of speakers, two typically, no more than 3, that's for sure. And then we would have a kind of a quick question and answer model where myself, I would kind of ask them both questions about their fields, their backgrounds, their journey, because we were interested in their faith journeys in science. That's what kind of struck a chord with us the most during the studio phase. And we wanted to bring that humane and that human side of science as well, and their Catholic journey to the congregation. So we would have that model of questions and answers, a bit of back and forth, and then at the end we would have a question and answer from the audience to the panel, moderated by Father Robert, who's the other co-director of the project. And our second phase was university chaplaincies, so Catholic university chaplaincies, where our model changed slightly. We realised that it may not work as much with the younger, more kind of, a younger audience, really. And the model changed slightly, so we would have a couple of professionals, we'd like to call them, and then we would have the students. So there were two students from each of the chaplaincies volunteered by their own chaplain because they were doing some work in the field or some studies in the field of science and faith or either or had a really keen interest. So we would have two of the chaplaincy students and two professionals. And we would try to find kind of a common ground and had a conversation around it. Then we would give the students an opportunity to ask, in terms of the students of the panel, they would ask the professionals off the panel some questions that they were interested in. And then as per the phase one that we had, the congregation phase that we had or the church phase that we had, we would let the audience ask some questions, again moderated by Father Robert. So we went from a purely professional interview question to a questions and answers, letting the students participate from the panel to ask their own panel professionals some questions, and then Q&A as well. The reason why we changed the model slightly as well was because we had our legacy phase in mind, and the legacy phase was we were trying to recruit and scout some talent at Catholic chaplaincies of people that we wanted, because we wanted to leave a legacy at the end of this project. You know, money isn't there forever, and we wanted to inspire and scout some Catholic speakers at university level so that we could start preparing them and getting them ready for a future in science and faith communication. That was always our goal. And you know, we scouted a few, we invited all the students from the chaplaincy panels to come to our training that we did in London at the Dominican Shrine, where Radio Maria is currently has a studio as well. And we did the training, and yeah, we've got them in touch with God and the Big Bang, which is this organization I spoke about that I worked with when I was at university. And they do science and faith training and communication for primary, secondary schools, and also what they call cathedral days, which a lot of schools come together for those. So yes, it was all the goal, and it was there, you know, that was our mindset, that we want to recruit the younger generation, the new generation of science and faith communicators, and specifically Catholic, because there's a lot of things that, especially if you're a teacher in a Catholic school or are in a Catholic context, require that kind of more, kind of niche understanding of the answers that the church would give to these questions.
So. Oh, well done, Marta. Can I ask, so you started off the first phase in parishes during COVID, though. The people had just started coming out. People, a lot of churches were still having online things, having meetings or group things. Can you share with us, Marta, and perhaps David, the other groups that you supported during this opening up of the world again? Was that a determined? Was it good in the end? Marta, how did those go? What do you think, parishes?
In terms of how they got back,
So with the opening of, so all the, maybe we'll start with David. David, with the groups that the messy play, the plays and things like that, how successful were they in a time where people were still like, no, I'm just going to be on the computer?
Well, this was amazing, really. I mean, the way that various churches were able to adapt to the constraints that they had. And then actually, in terms of the technology, beginning to see some of the opportunities that we didn't have before. So, for example, we now can have virtual seminars where people from all parts of the world can join together. One of the things we do as E-Class is bring together bishops, not just from different denominations, but different parts of the world, to talk about public theology and science. That was something that we never imagined being able to do pre-COVID. I think also then, we did some research during the COVID period. That's another one of our strands. We research what senior church leaders and clergy and priests believe. And what we discovered there was something about how COVID affected people's view of nature. Now, if you remember our politicians and our leaders, they often used this warfare mentality that we have to battle against COVID. We have to triumph against COVID. Now, this is a conflict language that often unites a nation at times of difficulty. That's fair enough. But if you see the natural world as negative, evil, you have to triumph over it. You actually negate it as gift of God, and you've got to be very careful about this. So one of the things that came out of our research during COVID was how you talk about viruses and the natural world, how you view, and Marta will know as a biologist far more about this than I do, but how you understand the natural world, and particularly when it affects us in difficult and evil ways. How do we understand a God of creation and the fact that we have viruses such as COVID? And how does God work in the world? Really important theological questions, as well as practical opportunities that come out of COVID.
I think so we actually had, remember the first few events we had that were kind of just as we were getting out of that lockdown, the kind of first big lockdown, and people were really, really cautious, but we still had good attendance. What, you know, we thought it was really good attendance because despite all the restrictions that were put in place and stuff, and people were very cautious. There was this hint or tint of fear, I think I could feel from people, mm-hmm. but they had lots of questions, and mm-hmm. I think in a way that this whole situation brought science and how do we stand with regards to science back to the forefront of people's minds again. So it was challenging at first with the restrictions. And I think there was one episode that we had to actually postpone because of the restrictions and stuff. We weren't really sure. And so we had to postpone it for a couple of months' time. And it was challenging.
One of us had COVID as well. I think that's
yeah,
what, I think
oh that's gosh, what, yeah, I forgot about
the,
that.
The
yeah,
technician had thing. COVID.
Yeah, it was...
I think Marta's absolutely right in terms of that important point that we were living at a time where people were talking about we're going to be led by the science.
Yeah,
and
the
that
science.
Is a constant kind of thing, as if science is a monolith. And one of the wonderful things about Marta's project and the work that Radio Maria have been doing is that concept of bringing together a number of different scientists of different backgrounds, of different ages. Because actually science is done by scientists. It's not just one kind of bank of knowledge that everyone agrees on and it's going to be there for eternity. We know that science is provisional. It develops. And even during COVID, we saw, if you remember, that different epidemiologists had different views on distancing or washing of hands or ventilation. The psychologist said, well, yes, the epidemiologist might want lockdown, but actually from a mental health point of view, the science is telling us that we need communities, we need people to get together. And so science is never just a monolith. It's got diversity to it. Fortunately, it has a method by which we're able to come to conclusions together. But they're always provisional conclusions. And I think science and theology is also, it's not just one dialogue. Different people from different churches with their denominational influences, their own faith background, approach science in different ways. And that's actually a good thing. And something that we can talk about and is demonstrated by having panels of people talking together and an openness to questions, which the project really inhabited and embodied.
I think one of the things that it might have been about COVID, but for all the topics, the feeling that I always got from people was this deep-seated desire to just do the right thing. Mm. And want to get the right answer and want to honor God with whatever the answer was. And that really, really struck a chord with me that, you know, we have these really, really faithful Christians who just want to do right by God, mm. who just want to do right by their communities, but engage as well, you know. And I think that was incredibly moving to see, you know, this deep-seated desire to just, I just want to do what's right by others, by God, and by my community as well.
And again, I mean, just to affirm that, Marta, one of the things that we do with our senior leaders is to introduce them to world-leading scientists, whether they're Christians or not. And one of the things that the bishops come away with is a sense that scientists on the whole are people who want to do right. Some of them may have faith, some of them may not. But actually, on the whole, our senior church leaders, far from seeing scientists as these kind of evil James Bond villains who want to dominate the world, actually are people who want to do right, who want to make the world a better place, who want to understand the world and help others understand the world. And this sense of vocation as scientists is very important and very moving, actually, for many of our senior church leaders.
It's true. That is something that definitely came across during the second phase as more as a scientist shared their faith, how they be what they were called to do and how it connected with their career. So let's take a break and let me open up the phone lines for our listeners. Oh, you guys have been holding back your questions so patiently. Thank you so much. But now they're open and we'd love for you to call in. The number is 01223 375 564. Perhaps you're a scientist and you're thinking, yes, I want to affirm what they've been saying. Well, call in. This is your chance. Perhaps you're a young person and you're thinking, I'm looking into science and I that's my but I didn't know my faith could come along with me. Well, call in because Marta and David would love to hear from you. 01223 375 564. Here is Burn Like a Star by Wren Collective, and it was one of the topics that Father Robert and many folks loved, the scientists loved talking about, was the creation, stars, the world, physics. And I just love a good dance tune.
We were born for greater things. We were born to chase your dreams. Come, my Lord, awaken holy fire. We are turning from our sin. We are praying.
Today on Just Life, we have with us Marta, who is the co-director of Faith Journeys in Science. And we also have David, who is the director of ECLAS. Also, he is just to add on to it, he is a research fellow, a research project person at St. John's College. And he and a group of other folks from Durham began over a decade ago, ECLAS, Equipping Christian Leadership in an Age of Science. We've been talking about the projects that ECLAS has supported financially, Messy Church, taking the folks out into nature, plays, speaker series, and also the programs that Radio Maria has taken to parishes and university chaplaincies. So now let's go into what is... Do British people... Sorry, I'm British by theory now. I thought science is something you don't talk about. It's like politics. We don't talk about this at the table. Has there been difficulties from any of the projects? Was that something to overcome? Or... it was pushed aside. Bring it on.
I think there is a hesitancy, both in culture and within the church. I think within culture sometimes, because in British education, people are streamlined either to science or to arts and humanities. A lot of people don't do any science after the age of 15, 16, and therefore feel a bit worried, particularly about experts in science, as if they're asking silly questions. And then sometimes within the church, because we've got this sense that, oh, science is a bit dodgy, it might be used by atheists, it might be disturbing for our faith, folk in the church are a little hesitant about whether we should talk about science within churches. And so some of the projects are exactly about overcoming that hesitancy and saying, it's okay to ask questions. It's okay to ask what you think might sound like silly questions. Actually, many of those questions, top scientists are still struggling with themselves. And it's all right in church to respect the authority of the traditions of a church, but also to ask questions. One of my favorite disciples in the Bible is Thomas, because Thomas is the guy who's not the doubter, Thomas is the guy who asks the questions that all the other disciples are too embarrassed to ask. He keeps asking Jesus questions. And actually, that's affirmed in John's gospel as a good thing, because Thomas's questions lead to Jesus saying things such as, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." If Thomas hadn't asked the question, Jesus wouldn't have said that very famous, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." So questions are a good thing. And I think creating atmospheres where people feel free to ask questions is very important.
I think one of the, I completely agree. And one of the things that we were really conscious of was to make the language and the conversation accessible. Because as you say, most people leave signs, not most, but some people leave signs behind by the age of 16 in the British curriculum, at least in English and Wales for sure. And they don't talk about that past age 16. And so people don't engage a lot of the time because they're just reticent. They're afraid they won't understand and they won't be able to measure up to that really is perceived really in circles as really intellectual conversations to put together theology and science and specifically really niche fields of science. And so we were really, really conscious of this, really, really aware, and we just wanted to make it really accessible. So we always made the speakers aware, look, I know you've been a lecturer for 20 years, but I'm going to ask you questions to, in a way, we called it between ourselves to dumb it down for us, but it was really like, I need to understand this and people need to be able to understand it in order to engage. So that was a really, really important part of the project.
Marta, you did that. You would always do that so well. When I would listen, I'd think, but what did that word just mean? And Marta would ask the question. So it is an important part to make sure that it's inclusive in that way. I love how in media you'll see the big hits, the big YouTube things are folks arguing about it. Oh, let's get an atheist against a bishop or something like that and see how they fight out. But that doesn't work when it's in person. David, do you want to expand on that?
Yeah, I think I'm a little hesitant myself about these big set piece debates between a leading Christian apologist and a leading atheist. And I think that's because you draw the battle lines and you set up a conflict mode. I tend not to do public debates anymore unless they're with people who I already know. And so I will have discussions with friends of mine who are scientists and atheists. But we do so as a conversation rather than trying to score points over one another. And what we often find is that we find areas of agreement and areas of difference. A number of years ago, the Bishop of Leeds, Anglican Bishop of Leeds, Bishop Nick Baines, brought together for about 300 clergy from his diocese. And he invited myself and Brian Cox to spend the day talking to each other about science and faith. Now, Brian Cox, wonderful broadcaster, wonderful physicist. He's not a person of faith, but he was very happy to sit and talk with 300 clergy and myself. It was fascinating to have that conversation, to find much that we had in common. For instance, where do the laws of physics come from? Why are they intelligible to us? Why do we get this sense of awe when we look at the universe? Things of that sort that scientists and people of faith share. They may have different answers to those questions, but they're common questions. And so I think by talking and being open to questions, and very importantly, I think within a debate, you rarely get the chance to say a very important phrase, which is, "I don't know." And actually, in a conversation, it's a really important thing for me to say, "Well, that's a really good question, but I don't know the answer." And I think that demonstrates a humility, but also a reality that we don't know the answer to every question, either in science or in faith.
I think we had that sort of format, you know, when we prepared the episodes with the speakers, we would have meetings on Zoom and with the students as well. And we always made it very clear, you're having a chat. That's how I was doing, you know, you're just having a chat. We're just talking to each other about things that matter to us. we're not here to argue, and we're not here to, you know, we will disagree, but we will call it an agree to disagree moment, and that's fine. But we just want it to feel, because it's so heated, you know, you get YouTube these videos like, this person destroys that person with the argument, and it's like, it's not about that. You know, we just want to have a conversation. We want to have a chat. We want people to feel at ease and very, very relaxed when having these, so that they have that freedom to ask a question in an environment where people are not afraid to say, I don't know, or what do you think? So that's definitely the approach we had with the shows as well.
I've got a caller on that would like to ask, to give a reflection. Hello, this is Charles from Cambridge. You're on air.
Hi. Thank you. I, having been part of this a little bit, I just wanted one, give a reflection, and then maybe ask a question, what next? Because the thing that impressed me in the first series, we had a youngster who came to help me with the recording, and he was brilliant. But it was watching him and the inspiration he got from listening to the speakers and going, wow, this is so great. And he said it helped me in my biology and various scientific exams, you know. But I watched him coming, you know, really having an inspiration from listening to the speaker. And then the second thing is going on particularly the universities, when we're going around the universities, is seeing how engaged these university students were in the debates. I remember in Durham particularly, because I had browbeaten two of my young cousins to come, and I thought they were coming by, you know, because I had told them to. But then I saw them engaged, and I saw them listening and asking questions, and I was really thrilled by that. And so one question to you, Marta, is what do you think we've achieved? Because one of the things we were trying to do is to find some young people to go out there. Do you think we've achieved that? And the second thing is to both of you, what else can we do as Radio Maria? Because we've come to this end, and I have no ideas of how we take this on, which is why so far there has been no application. I'd be grateful for any contribution about how we could contribute to another project of this magnitude.
All right.
So for us, I think in parishes, my goal, you know, my goal was like, oh yeah, people are just going to talk about this all the time now. But I realized that over time, the actual thing we'd accomplished is that we planted a seed, and that was enough, and God would do the rest. And universities, a couple of students, actually, Francesca and Sonna, they've gone on to do workshops on science and faith with God on the Big Bang. I do kind of encourage listeners to look them up as well, in case they want to get them over to their school or cathedral. And yeah, we've got students who are doing these workshops in science and faith. They're going specifically into Catholic schools, which was our goal. And for other university students that were brought along, forced by their uncles or by their friends, I hope that we've planted a seed, and our job is to, you know, spread those seeds, and then the Lord will do the rest.
Absolutely. I love the image there of planting seeds, and then Charles's question about how do you water and cultivate that. And I think some of the other projects that we do at E-Class are designed to try and help that, and how they then translate into particularly your Roman Catholic constituency is really interesting. So how do we work with theological colleges in a program called Science for Seminaries? Now, we've worked with a number of Catholic seminaries on this, particularly in Ireland. How do you embed science and faith within the training that priests and other leaders in the church get? I think then something about how do we create new stories of science and faith? And often these areas are dominated by false myths of Galileo and the church, or Darwin and the church. What we've got at the moment is a number of authors writing a number of new narratives, not made up narratives, but real stories about science and faith. And on our website, you'll be able to see some of these untold stories of science and faith. The fact that the Apollo astronaut Buzz Aldrin served Holy Communion to himself on the moon as the first meal when Apollo 11 landed. The fact that calculations about when Easter is are fundamental to the development of mathematics and science. Questions about Lourdes and stories about Lourdes and the sense that God is at work in the world and how the church has often asked questions about the miraculous. These are stories that are often unheard stories against the clamor of conflict and all the rest of it. So I think how Marta is absolutely right. The key is developing young communicators. But then I think telling some of the untold stories of science and faith and working with those who have authority and leadership in the church from a very early stage are some of the ways that we can cultivate the seed that Radio Maria has already planted.
And I hope that if you're listening and you're a church leader, a priest, or in some a parish council member, you'll hear these positives that have come from this, this dialogue, these encounters, the joy, the gifts that your parishioners have and can share, and how it isn't a debate. No, when you have these in-person meetings, it becomes a beautiful, it toils the soil and mixes the nutrients in so these little seeds can grow up. Oh, look at me with a metaphor. Charles, thank you so much for calling. We have we are ending our program now because time does that, but I think there's definitely future talks and encounters to be had. If you listened in and you're thinking, ooh, ECLAS, equipping Christian leadership in an age of science, I need to learn how my project can perhaps be fertilized by ECLAS. The website is eclasproject.org, ECLAS. Project.org. If you've been wanting to hear any of these episodes that Marta shared about the scientists, the chaplains, the students sharing their faith, you can find that on our website, radiomariaengland.uk. And all the podcasts are available on Radio Maria England's Science and Faith through all your podcast providers. David, I'm going to leave you and Marta with the last words, though. David, anything else you want to share with our listeners?
No, I just want to commend Radio Maria for its work and Marta and yourself for working this. This is a wonderful thing to be able to see growing. And it's, you know, it was a risky thing to do. It was a very brave thing to do. But often that's the way that you establish new conversations and new discussions. And so I would simply want to say thank you for all of the work that you're doing and continue to do.
Oh, and Marta, you've got the last word.
Right back at you, and definitely help. Thank you for the support and everyone who's been part of the Radio Maria project and all the parishes and speakers and students who've been definitely gracious beyond measure. And if you don't mind, Helene, I would like to share a quote that I have in my classroom up in my school by Francis Collins, director of the NIH. He says, "The God of the Bible is also the God of the genome. It can be worshipped in the cathedral or in the laboratory. His creation is majestic, awesome, intricate, and beautiful, and it cannot be a war with itself. Only we imperfect humans can start such battles, and only we can end them."
Thank you both. God bless you both, and we look forward to hearing more of projects to come.
You've been listening to a podcast from Radio Maria. If you enjoy these programs, please consider becoming one of our monthly donors. All you need to do is visit www.radiomariaengland.uk and click on the Support Us tab for various options. We rely entirely on donations, so thank you to all our listeners who support us.